Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap?
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
It doesn't get more intense than this moment.
Stand well back, everybody, because that is a different class from France.
Another kick from Ford. Little chip over the top. Where's this one bouncing? Oh, it's bouncing! England's way again!
McInally pounces! The opportunistic try from the former Scottish captain.
Sexton from outside the 10-metre line. It's spinning! It's spinning! Jonathan Sexton has made it!
Here goes Thomas Williams. Chippering! Charge for the line!
Well, not to remind Keith Wood, who is with us and was there, but for the first time since 1998, Ireland are 0-2 in the championship and there are no guarantees in that closing week. Murrayfield round 4, England in round 5, Rome, of course, to come in 2 weeks' time. Wales, meanwhile, much maligned, find themselves top of the table with France. Lewis Rees-Zammit, suddenly a household name, and England took care of Italy. Keith Wood, you're very welcome.
Hiya, Joe. How are you?
Very well. And Liam Tolan, great to have you with us.
Thanks, Joe.
So, Keith, 0-2. We have had mitigating factors aplenty, red cards, injuries, but also 2 weeks where Ireland aren't defending amazingly and don't look like scoring a bunch of tries. And suddenly there's a bit of pressure in the air.
Yeah, there's always pressure. It's a very pressurised competition. It's where you have to stand up and play and perform. And it's funny, I've looked at the games, the last two games. I think we've defended quite well. It's very hard to get through us. We've made a couple of mistakes and that does happen. But we are very vulnerable on the outside edge when teams get on our outside. For some reason, for the last 2 weeks, we've bitten in all the time. James Lowe has done three of those in the last 2 weeks. And he can't do that. You know, if he's to play and he offers a threat and he offers a very big booming kick, though we kicked too much yesterday, he offers a lot, but we can't afford those sort of mistakes and that decision making. And Jemison Gibson-Park, him coming in, the mitigation for that's the ball bounce. That confuses everybody. You react to the bounce of the ball. You don't know exactly how far it's going to travel. Will it bounce up? Will it kind of grubber along the ground? What'll happen? He came in and once he came in the first step, he was out to lunch, it was gone. But it's funny, I was writing something earlier on and trying to get my head around what the difference is and why those mistakes are being highlighted so much at the moment. And the reasoning is that up to 2018, we were scoring a huge number of points, plenty of points. And you could make a couple of those mistakes. I think we were making them. I think Jacob Stockdale made a good few of those when he started, but you didn't mind because he was scoring a couple of tries a match nearly, and we were scoring tons of points. And now we don't look like we're going to score points. So it's almost amplifies those mistakes. So I think James Lowe offers an awful lot, but we can't afford him to be making those mistakes. So that needs to be tidied up immediately.
Liam, certain parallels yesterday with the game in Paris, in that Ireland come out and put 100% in and are on top for a lot of the opening exchanges, but with very little to show for it. And then as the game starts to settle down, France pick Ireland off.
Yeah, I think there was something interesting that Andy Farrell said after the game, that they had a couple of chances and they took their chances. And I think that's a stylistic thing that we need to examine, because CJ Stander, after two games, has 36 carries. He's number one in the Six Nations in carries. And the really good news is where he's carrying. He's 182 metres, which is about 5 metres a carry, which is a huge improvement on previous seasons. So Ireland are playing it, are putting their loose forwards out into the edges of the pitch, and someone like CJ Stander is benefiting from that. And would you believe, of the top 10 carries in the Six Nations, there's five of them are Irish, and six occupy the amount of metres gained. So we're doing an awful lot of yardage and carries, but there's a one distinct statistic that jumped out at the weekend. France are number one in offloads with 21, and Ireland are number six, or last in number of offloads, which is six. So there's precious little continuity in what we're actually doing. So huge amount of, like, we're number one in metres carried overall, but we're not creating the chances that Andy Farrell is referring to that France have done. And the first score that they had, there wasn't a chance. They just offloaded. And they had powerful ball carriers, old school stuff, running hard, expecting the offload, expecting whoever's on the ball to put the ball into space, and they run into it and they score the try. So there's a stylistic difference, I think, between what France are doing and what we're doing. And I feel sorry for the Irish coach, Andy Farrell, because all the obvious injuries and HIAs, etc. But there's a question mark about the spine of the team. Certain positions need serious resolution. Hooker, number eight, and nine and ten is the obvious ones. But to build on what Keith was saying there around the defence, there's a couple of things that show me there's a disjoint in what we're doing. Ireland stole a line-out off France in the first minute. It came to Billy Burns, who kicked it. Now, back in the old days, the most potent ball you can get is one off a stolen line-out. It forces your back line to transition it from defence into attack and then expose that turnover. I don't know what Robbie Henshaw, 12, is saying to Billy Burns at 10, but Billy Burns just kicked the ball down, even though there was a massive overlap. So those little sub-unit communication aspects, both as Keith referred to in the defence aspect on the fringes, are happening in around 10 and 12 as well, when opportunities could become chances, but we're not necessarily spotting them and we're not executing them.
And it feels like we're into about year three of this team. I mean, those specifics are very interesting, and that moment you talk about off the line-out has done the rounds on Twitter today, and everybody has seen the overlap. It's almost the 7v3 England had last week in terms of people looking at that snapshot. But bigger picture for a second, to put it in like the bluntest terms, is it harsh to say, as a you know, more casual onlooker than you two, that we just look pretty similar in stodginess when it comes to attack to how we looked under Joe Schmidt's last year? And actually, we're now just minus the Joe Schmidt set play, which could create a bit of something out of nothing here and there. We don't look actually, Liam, like we're making much progress over years now when it comes to attack.
Well, there's definitely a shift in, like, when you see CJ Stander's, I started with the statistics, like he's changed his, he was getting like 1 meter on average a carry. Now it's five. And you might say, well, hang on, that's only 4 meters. That's a monumental shift, because he's playing in a different part of the pitch. I do feel for the coach around, like, defensively, losing Murray at scrum half is an enormous impact on our defensive systems. Also, an awful lot of our forwards are finding themselves in part of the pitch that's exposing them to be asking defensive questions. I just think that we're not embracing a better kicking game to expose the grass and to allow us to run to it, and our offloading is non-existent. And then when you look at our centres, like particularly Ringrose, his breaks are because he kind of half puts the ball under his arm and looks for a break. We're not necessarily creating the opportunity for him to actually attack and use his wheels. I feel for Keith Earls in a similar light. So there is definitely a transition, not helped by the injuries and not helped by the indecision. We don't know our 9 and 10. And it's very difficult to judge where the team is when you factor all that into all into play. I decided to pick one aspect, which is called continuity, and I think we're miles behind there.
Keith, do you want to come in?
Yeah, it's funny. I think defensively where we're exposed most is wingers coming in or players coming in on the last. You know, they're a little bit exposed inside with some players being caught, but that you have to force the people, the guys with the ball, to make a great pass for it to be a try. You can't miss that chance or that opportunity. I think we do get exposed a little bit by not coming up on both sides of the ruck. And that's, I know, something you mentioned to me earlier on today, Joe, that how did we get caught by somebody coming back down around? That's fatigue, you know, because we're putting in. So not a great one for the statistics, but Liam has mentioned a lot of statistics there. The amount of effort that's going in is pretty extraordinary. So I would look at that performance and say we didn't look like we were going to score. I think Kelleher's try was fortunate, albeit brilliant. I think Lowe was unlucky, and that was our only real chance in the game to score. I think France had five or six chances they butchered. So when Farrell said France had two chances and they took them, France had about seven chances, they took two. They were extraordinary tries because they play with a level of freedom, but also they play, for that's been a philosophical change back to the way that France play. So Ireland have not played that way and have not played that way for 6 or 7 years. We play risk averse, we go through the phases, we get to 6, 7, 8 phases, and there's a disconnect in the defensive line opposite us, and our world-class 9 and 10 exploit those holes, and we have a level of preparation that's gone in to know that there's going to be A, B, C, D wrong in the defensive setup, and we're going to be able to exploit it. That's fine when all our players are at the top of the game 5 years ago, but after that first game, I think in 2019, when England hammered us in Lansdowne Road, it was 32-13. They bullied us off the field. I think every other team that had capacity figured out that actually, if you stop Ireland getting to the 6 or 7 phases, if you keep a defensive line that's strong enough, if you don't put too many people into the ruck, and if you have a hard-pressed defence against Ireland, Ireland struggle. So their plan A is to go through all the phases. If you stop them, what's plan B? Plan B is to kick the ball in a Garryowen. That's what it's been for the last number of years. That is what it is still now. I would just say, looking at it, I thought the effort that was put in was valiant, but it was one that would keep us in the game and we had a chance to win. And we had all of that. So as a game plan, yes, it was a game plan that could have beaten a team that's riding high in people's opinions at the moment. And yet it didn't offer a huge amount. That was as much to stop them doing things than for us to create things. So for me, we weren't going through 6 or 7 phases. We're still doing a little bit too much one-out ball for short carries. And I know CJ carried a bit more, but we're still body on body. When the French got the opportunity, they're looking for space and they're looking to give the 50-50 pass. Mm. We haven't done that for an awful long time. In fact, if you were throwing 50-50s, you weren't picked in a Joe Schmidt side, but that was fine. And I said it last week, I think Joe Schmidt would change an awful lot of things now, because the world has changed, the way people are playing against Ireland has changed heavily, and you'd have to change it up to be an awful lot more. And I do think Farrell is trying to change it, but now we're trying to change it with wholesale changes. For me, there was a lack of confidence in our passing. So when we attacked passing, when we got the ball deep, none of the passes were out in front. Mm. They were all having to readjust to catch. There was no speed or pace put onto it. So I don't know that we were attacking with any real intent. So for me, I don't know that we're making progress at the moment. I imagine in training, they're making a lot and they need to get it to click into it. But for me, we were somehow in the game, and because France were magnificent and then abject close to the line, but they could have beaten us by 25 points, and I don't know that you would have complained about it. I'm going to ask a question before Liam gets in. Is that something that we have to prepare ourselves for, that we can take a big risk, that we can lose a match or lose badly for us to make the progression to move, you know, to really move on, to force everything? Or do we stick to box kicking it? Because I can just say, in terms of watching the game, when we kick nearly every ball, there's very little enjoyment in that, you know. And I know we want to win, but it also, it has to be some way entertaining. That was tough. That was, the entertainment came from France. There was huge courage from the Irish players, but we need to get a bit of confidence in our handling.
And to answer your own question then, Keith, do you think Andy Farrell would be given the latitude if Ireland were 0-4, leaving Italy aside for a second, if we saw some more risk and spark and creativity and some of the things you're talking about at Murrayfield and against England, but lost those games?
Well, I don't think we've ever shown that before. The IRFU has always been very keen on high performances in Six Nations because that's where the money comes in. And so, suddenly, you might have said 18 months ago, could we have this conversation and would we be allowed to do that? We might be. I think it becomes much harder now when everything is so financially straitened. But I still, do you know what? Do you know what stuck out a huge amount for the last 2 weeks? And I don't think we've played well in the last 2 weeks, and I think we've made mistakes that just destabilise us somewhat. And I think our confidence is a bit shook. But I do see a team that's playing for their coach. I do see a huge level of industry, honesty, and like, you want spark and you want verve and you want change. Of course we do. We want all of those sort of things. So, you need to be given the time to make the change. This is like any change we're making from a very prescriptive way of playing, which we were found out on in the last 18 months. Any change on that is going to take a bit of time. It does require change of personnel. But like, when you read all the papers, everybody's saying like Farrell out sort of thing. A, it's not football. B, he is a good, honest football guy. Yeah, like a really good rugby guy. He knows the game. He knows it very well. And yes, he knows an awful lot of it from rugby league, but he also knows a lot of rugby union. He's coached a lot of really, really good sides. We made changes that have improved last week. Bringing Paul O'Connell in has had a pretty big impact pretty quickly, because suddenly that tightened it up. But we're not really power athletes, and we're not playing a game with a huge amount of pace in it. So I think it takes time for that to change. I do think there's a lot of guys in the background. They may not be ready yet, but they might be ready in 6 months or 9 months. And it's, how do we bring them on board at this present moment in time? So I don't think this is as bleak as people make it out. I don't think we played well, but I'm not saying that we're seeing the green shoots, but I think we have to start seeing green shoots.
Liam, one last one on the attack then. Ronan O'Gara, for instance, over the weekend after the game, he talked about how lateral Ireland were with the ball, hips facing the touchline as one of the big issues which bothered him, a lack of tempo. Like, where's Mike Cadd in all this? He's had a decent amount of time with the team now.
I have to have some sympathy for the coaching because of all the changes in personnel to feed off what Keith is talking about there. If I answer the question by looking at France, I said Doulin at 15 was like, he was the player of the match, wasn't he? DuPont is possibly the most important player in the Six Nations. But for me, Paul Williams in the second row, he's a South African in the second row for France. He's 6'7" and he's 20 stone. He's 126 kgs. Like, that type of athlete, we just really desperately need in the second row. We need a really big athlete who's going to just shift breakdowns and rucks and mauls by himself. And that creates the inertia going forward. And we're certainly struggling at the moment when we don't have an offloading game. We find ourselves going east to west, just over and back and over and back. And at times as well, we're splitting our attack. We're having certain amount of numbers on our right-hand side of the breakdown, certain numbers on the left-hand side of the breakdown, and we're not quite flooding one channel with the other. We're not exposing weak numbers in defence. Like, so France were able to keep 13, 14 players in the defensive line, and we split our attack. So we're really struggling. And without the power athlete, without someone who can run a hard line, and I've been watching, say, Henshaw or Leinster, he's just been running brilliant lines. But that started because his pack is giving him a front foot access into the game. And we're just not getting that. We're being bullied by the likes of the French pack. And, of course, we have an English pack to come up against as well. So it is a worry. So which comes first? Do you change the style of the game to suit the players? And that's very complicated, particularly what Keith was talking about, when you're changing the players in the first instance, we're in a transitional change in the players. Or do you go for big brutes? Like, I've always been a fan of Ruddock at six. I put him at six. I put Connors at seven. You're looking for a footballing number eight, but CJ is there for the moment. Doris, is he coming back? But you need a big second row to help. I think the Irish scrum was superb against France. The Irish lineout was certainly superb against France. So for me, the key to the next 12 months is continuity. How are we going to create forward momentum, and how are we going to create a continuity game from last in the Six Nations in offloading? We need to be up around one or two in the Six Nations for offloading.
Yeah, that doesn't feel like a new point at all. I have to say, that feels like a 2019 World Cup point. That feels like Japan at the World Cup, everything we're not doing. And that's sort of the frustration, Liam. And, you know, I query as well, Liam, this notion that we're in transition. Every team is in transition. There's a huge turnover of players in the modern game for obvious reasons. Like, Johnny Sexton aside, we're not in transition. I don't accept that. Conor Murray is of an okay age and there's able replacements. I accept there is a drop-off when it comes to Sexton and who stands in, and I accept it's an important position. But the age profile of the team, to me, that just doesn't fly compared to any other team. I don't see how we're especially in transition to the extent that it should mean these 2 years are almost lost years, Liam.
Well, I suppose transition in the sense that there's certain personnel are going to be changed and the style of the game is going to be changed. So there's two things that are happening.
But it's more style, isn't it? Like, we can't say we suddenly are losing a bunch of players and we've got a bunch of 20-year-olds in here and it'll take 3 years. Like, we're talking style.
Yeah, no, that's true. But I'm repeating myself a little bit in having a huge sense of forgiveness for the coaching structure because of the injuries that they've experienced and then the pressures, as Keith has alluded, in the Six Nations to win. If you start losing games, you lose momentum. It's all the cliches that we're familiar with. So in that sense, Italy couldn't have come at a better time. There is an opportunity. And you went back to what's Mike Catt's role in this. I don't know who ultimately is picking the team. Obviously, Andy Farrell is the head and is he picking the team? But who's picking 9 and 10? Who's picking Hooker? So there's still question marks over the spine of the team. You know, we don't know who our best hooker is. We don't know who our best scrum half is at the sense. We don't know who our best out half is in view of what's coming down the track. We know that Johnny Sexton's our best out half, but we discussed here a few weeks ago, there's now only 23 internationals to the World Cup?
Yeah.
And apart from Sexton, the rest of them have 11, 10, 6, and 0 caps. So if that's not a transition of your quarterback, then what is, you know? So I would hope that we can ask the question, if our starting out halves aren't good enough to be World Cup quarterfinal, semi-final players, are they not going to become that good, then we need to skip over them. So for me, then you need to start looking at the next layer.
Yeah. And that brings us promptly back to Harry Byrne. A conversation, Keith, I feel like we've had 478 times in the last couple of months, but that's where we're back to. I mean, is it throw him in against Italy territory, or is that just an unrealistic expectation of Andy Farrell, in fairness to him?
Strangely, I don't think it's an unrealistic expectation. And we spoke last week and you asked who would I pick, and I would have picked Johnny Sexton to play France. For a whole variety of different reasons, and there was a lot of people that had some criticism over the fact that Craig Casey sat on the bench and wasn't brought in. I get that, you know. I still would have liked to have seen him play. You know, if he's good enough to be in the squad, I would have given him 10 or 15 minutes off the bench. He was quick, but I want Craig Casey to play like Craig Casey, which is wherever the ball is, he is, and he's slinging the ball at his 10. And I want that to be the case, that primary role of the nine. I want that to be the case when he comes on. I don't want him to come on to box kick, you know, and maybe that's the reason they didn't bring him on, if that was it. So you don't know. But when I go to the next game, what do I want? We need to properly blood players for this one. Now, I thought Ross Byrne kicked, he is a beautiful goal kicker. He really is. He came on, he kicked it. It was fantastic. But he again got deep when the pressure came on in the last few minutes of the game. So he went deeper and deeper and deeper. And that's what pressure does. So you never know until you play these big games. That's, you know, and it's, I think it's hard sometimes for fans to understand how bloody ludicrously intense it is and how much your decision-making process comes down and gets halved as you go up a standard up to an international play. It you suddenly have no time. Everything operates at a faster pace. So would I do that for Italy? Yes, because we have to be able to beat Italy with a young fella at 10. And we have to put... look after him really well. So that doesn't mean, it could mean having Conor Murray on at 9 and having a senior guy on with him and maybe Craig Casey sitting on the bench afterwards with getting a good half an hour if you can. You'd expect the pack of forwards to do a serious job to do it. And so I wouldn't be saying let's get 6 guys and change 6 of them, but 9 and 10, I would be saying we have to look at that game in particular over every other game. That is the game to make that one. And like, if it says, well, what if we lose? If our head now gets to the idea that we can't try out somebody for the fear of losing, when we know we've so many big things ahead over the next 2 years, and we do know that, you know, Johnny is not going to go on forever, we have to start making those present calls. And I think he has tried to make it. I thought, in my view, he made the right call picking Billy Burns to start yesterday. It was the right decision. Give him a chance to get back on the horse. He did okay, made a few mistakes again. He's still a young guy in an international jersey. We are looking by a comparison to a guy who's played 100 times, you know, to a world player of the year. And you're saying, well, yeah, he's not good enough as him yet. But then they'll never be good enough unless you give him a chance. But for me, and I know it's a huge jump, but actually Liam's line there, I don't always give Liam compliments, right? But his line for the fact, are we going to try and pick a guy who we think could be great in a couple of years' time, and he may not be as good as some of the other guys are at this present moment in time, maybe that's a good thing to do as well. But you have to protect him if you pick him. You know, you have to say, you're almost on a freebie. Get out there and enjoy yourself. Take it flat. You're going to get smashed a few times. They're going to target you, but you're going to have a big guy outside you and a big guy inside you, and let's make certain that they look after you properly. And we know you're getting picked for this one. If you're not picked for the one after it, you're not dropped. This is part of the plan. Explain the whole thing out there, and maybe then you can get the best out of them.
Two last quick points in Ireland then. Aileen, look, France are a joy to watch, you know, and you kind of, geez, I mean, they're beautiful. With a view to getting a sense of where you think the gap is, like, did 2 points flatter Ireland on that scoreboard? Like, you know, the gap was, I think, 12 points in Paris in October. It was 2 points, obviously, yesterday. It felt like about as comfortable a 2-point win as you could have away from home. Did you, like, the gap there feels pretty sizable, no?
I agree with you. I think if I was to summarize it into two things, I think Ireland still are looking for ruthless precision in everything they do. It has to a million phases to get, you know, if you do 82 phases, then a hole will open up there and then you'll go through the gap. And it's kind of chess by numbers that you'll eventually win. Whereas the French are not burdened by that at all. They're ruthless rugby players. Like, and that's one of the things about Craig Casey. The longer it takes him to play for Ireland, the more chance that the Munster system will beat out this young, vibrant, aggressive, hungry player that's as close to an Augusto Pichet that you can think of. He's just a ball of energy. And I'd love to get him, to see him get in a game, just to see that ball of energy and holding on to it. Because there's a risk that the Irish system will knock that out of him. And that's why I'd loved it. But I think that's the difference. Ireland need to come away in a way, this marriage to the breakdown, a marriage to doing 1,000 things before the opening happens. The French don't have any of those problems. But then they have athletes. And I've mentioned Paul Williams, the second row. Like, they've got some monsters, and that's very helpful.
Keith, 2 points flattered Ireland, briefly.
Oh, yes. I think France wasted so many opportunities. The things that make them so exciting to watch and brilliant could drive you mad as a coach. But I can tell you what, they are not used to winning away from home against a team like Ireland. Their reaction afterwards was this was a huge scalp for them. Good day for them.
Yeah, very good day for them. And then the other point, we touched on James Lowe at the top of the show, but Liam, James Lowe was discussed after Cardiff and several people were worried about him going into the French game and then he was exposed again. Is he going to get this right, do you suspect? Because he's not a young player, or do some, you know, brilliant wingers on the ball and big left boot and bringing lots of things to the party, you know, you, God doesn't give you everything. Is there a chip missing there?
Well, as the fella said, what God left out of him, the defensive coach won't put back in. But I think that's a bit tongue-in-cheek. I definitely think he's more than capable of adding enormous value to Ireland. And he definitely is someone that we have to stick with. It is probably one of the great tests of the coaching structure to find a system that allows him either covers up his weaknesses. And that goes back, I mentioned a little bit earlier on about where forwards are defending. And for me, one of the big things is if your front five are filling the field and making massive hits, your wingers are less and less likely to be making tackles because the whole thing's pushed out towards the tram tracks. And it appears that at the moment, when Irish players have about a 10-metre blind side or a 10-metre width to defend, that they're making bad decisions. That's a system failure along with an individual. So the system has to be fixed. But I think he'll be a huge beneficiary of that. Okay. And obviously then, as Keith was saying, pushing up on both sides, there's a system, defensive system thing that has to find its feet. And by the same token, Joe, that is in existence in the attack as well. There's still a dysfunction in the attack. Billy Burns kicking the ball when maybe Rob Penshaw, I don't know what he said, listen, this comes out with us. We have an opportunity here.
Okay. Our rugby on off the ball is with thanks to Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in. Keith, we should talk Scotland-Wales because this was just insane. Wales have come away with a bonus point win. Just to re-jog people's memories of how mad it got. 17-3 down. Darcy Graham scored a great try, that little Ali Price kick over the top. And then Stuart Hogg scored the try. It was a set play off the scrum. 17-3, you think, wow, Scotland really mean business this year. Liam Williams did make it 17-8 against 15 men. Xander Fagerson does his thing and gets a red card. And then there's a try off a mull. But then on 65 minutes, Stuart Hogg scores a try to go 24-20 up. And then Rhys Samet does his thing to go 25-24 up. So all sorts happened. Rhys Samet's a star in the making. And still everyone's looking at Wales going, nobody's that worried. But hey, look, they're 2-for-2.
Well, they've it figured out. They will always win against 14 people. That seems to work for them. I mean, I thought Wales were poor against Ireland, and for all their paucity of skill, they eked out a win. You know, we weren't able to do it because we were down to 14 players. We didn't. I still thought we'd win it. We didn't. Scotland were. Scotland are good to watch at the moment. They are playing a style. They're having a cut. There's people with something going about them. They're the little chips in over the top, the little grubbers along the ground that turn you. You know, they're finding grass all the time, but they're also having a punt. They also have gas. You know, Stuart Hogg is fast. I was going to say Darcy Bustle, but Darcy Graham has great feet. Is very quick, very, very capable. And as soon as they went down, there was a panic. They panicked. And suddenly, some of the things that they were doing, they kicked for the corner too much instead of, they could have kicked for posts on a couple of occasions. And I know one of those paid off in getting a score, but these were kickable kicks, you kick them over. But I just think they almost lost the run of themselves on it. And that's why I like when you see what was the nickname they were giving him? They were giving Lewis Samet a nickname. I can't remember what it was.
Rhys
Lightning. Pure gas and great skill to control his kick over the top. But he still doesn't have a big stride length. He's going to get faster because his running technique still isn't right, and he is flying. So when you have players that are quick and are able to do things, it's pretty interesting. But I don't know. I thought there was a really big change, which I liked, was they took Dan Biggar off, when they went to chase the game and they brought on Callum Sheedy. And Sheedy has that little brio of youth, the ability, maybe not as conditioned to play international rugby, and maybe a little bit more freedom for the fact that, sure, let's have a cut. And they did what they had to do. I mean, it was, again, it was a cracking game. It was a real great Six Nations game.
It was. Liam, what was your read on these two?
Yeah, a moment of brilliance, wasn't it, from the Welsh winger, which made the difference. I suppose a word on the refereeing and the yellow cards and the high hits. I think that will obviously find its... We need to change the behaviour of the players entering breakdowns, and the heavy punishment is impacting outcomes of games. But I would hope in pretty soon coaches will start coaching that style of breakdown play out of the game. And it would be great to see 15 play 15 through the end and be able to judge. What it does, though, I think, again, with us playing Italy and then Scotland and England, I think England, by the time we get to play them, will have matches under their belt, which will improve them an awful lot from where they currently are. So that's going to be a massive test. But I suppose in terms of where we stand stylistically, how we adapt to play against Scotland would be really, really interesting. What side we're going to select and how we're going to play is going to be such a test for our coaches to see, can we navigate that particular, because that's a humdinger of a match waiting for us.
Yes. Not to navel gaze again and bring it back to Ireland, Keith, but she's a bit of that Scottish fun. I wouldn't mind seeing a bit of that from Ireland, you know?
Yeah, well, look, it's a different style, and they've been at it for a lot longer, and they've suffered a damn sight longer than we have. I mean, look, I spent a lot of times working with the BBC up and having to deal with Andy Nicol, who would say at the start of every single game, "This is our time now. Our confidence is up," and then they'd lose, and he'd be totally despondent. And like Scotland have had nothing but the horrors for nearly 20 years, and they deserve their time, and there's excitement for it. But look, they are playing in the image of their coach, a guy who I often would have said didn't quite know what he was going to do himself. Mm. He was just a football player again. He would play whatever he could see in front of him. He would do whatever it was, and you had to try and get on his radar, in his idea, which was incredibly hard actually, because there was no structure to anything he did. And one of the big parts of his training is unstructured training. So the ball gets thrown up in the air and just deal with it. You know, there's not a freedom to it, but it's a freedom of expression. There's the opportunities to go for everything.
Yeah.
I think part of that comes in the selection of his captain, a guy who had some of his difficulties in the past, but is a guy of pure natural talent and gas, and he wants to have a bit of a cut. He expresses himself every time he plays the game. Mm. Scotland are quite in that image in many cases.
Well, Scotland are in Paris next. Now, that's one to watch, I would think, that game. And then, Liam, England, I presume, on the up and getting fitness and coming back into things after that win against Italy, they're in Cardiff, where we'll get a really much better read on Wales.
There must be enormous pressure on Eddie Jones now at the moment, because England, you know, he's got his excuses because of the Saracens and all that sort of stuff, but they're playing really badly. Like, they're for a side that did so well in the World Cup, and the performance against New Zealand was phenomenal, they seem to have fallen a huge, huge distance. So it's going to be really, really interesting. Like, the pressure's, like, in a sense for Andy Farrell, the pressure isn't anything like what Eddie Jones must be feeling now, because he really needs to get a result. My worry, of course, is that their match fitness is going to positively improve their performances as well. And it's going to be a very, very tough game for us too. But I think that France, what they showed in terms of your question regarding England, France, what France showed in the closing minutes against Ireland was a discipline that over the years would have leaked some sort of a weakness and it would have conceded the game. They were very disciplined right to the end. Remember, some of the daft players they've had in the last five or six seasons seem to have been kicked out. And Teddy Thomas, the way he was put on the bench for this game, was a real insight into the ruthlessness of their coach and the standards of their coach. And the systems of what France are doing is really, really impressive. And that's, you know, why I would have a real hope that what they're doing is successful, because we should all be following it to a degree.
And Liam, do you think the England issue is largely just fitness, or is there something stylistically there which Eddie Jones needs to get on top of?
Eddie Jones will always try and shape the conversation, particularly Ireland or kicking team. England have been a far greater kicking team under Eddie Jones from the moment he stepped in. So they have a very strong game plan that's linked to their 9 and 10 kicking and a huge power game. But they clearly have a fitness aspect and they kind of deliver that, and also they have an accuracy aspect. They're not playing well. They're disjointed in many ways. Their error count has been huge. So I think that there seems to be an unsettled squad side there, and a number of their coaches, obviously with the COVID thing, is impacting them as well. But I think there's real worries about it, because when we came into the Six Nations, word around the campfire was that England could probably field two or three sides that would dominate the Six Nations. Well, that's proven not to be the case, so they are struggling.
Mm. Johnny May's try, Keith, is that allowed?
No. Well, it was allowed because he gave it. And you know what? There was a couple of things on that, because I'm having great fights with my sons watching it at home at the moment. So we were trying to argue. So I said, no, that's not a try. You can't jump there. And my eldest said, explain under what rule or what law that isn't. And Jesus, of course, I got it arseways. But I watched Nigel Owens gave his explanation, which was just, it was lovely for me, because when I looked at it, it looked wrong. And you know, when it looks wrong, it tends to be wrong. So are you allowed to dive for a try? Of course you are. Are you allowed to dive to avoid a tackle, to jump to avoid a tackle? Which is what he did. He jumped up in the air. No, he did it almost in the act of it. But he jumped to avoid the tackle more than diving for the line. And that's illegal. You're not allowed to jump into the tackle. And it's very rare that those happen in that perfect line. So if I was running straight at the line and you ran to tackle me and I jumped over you, that's a penalty. You can't do it. Mm. And so it's just for the fact that it was almost masqueraded as a dive. And it was extraordinary skill. But for me, that was wrong. And no, I don't want that at all. So Nigel Owens wrote on it, I think, this morning. And can I just say I was relieved that he said the same thing, because I was arguing and losing an argument with my sons. So
get used to it.
Yeah, one of the many arguments I lose with my sons.
So to sign off, look, we're a bit down in the dumps about this Ireland situation. We'll talk to Keith next week. Lee, might be a week or two further before we check in with you again. Where are we? Give me the brief toll and synopsis here, because I'm not seeing much progress and it just feels a little bit wishy-washy at the moment.
I think the set piece has been very impressive. I think Porter's really beginning to grow into tight head. There's an opportunity maybe putting him into loose head and putting Furlong in tight head. That'd be pretty interesting. But there's a spine of the team issue that needs to be sorted out in many, many ways. However, stylistically, we're doing a million ball carries, we're leading the charts in that, but we're not going anywhere and we're not creating opportunities. So for me, the big challenge is the continuity of our game. We need to start offloading and get ball carriers expecting to pass and ball support runners to run suitable lines to that. We have loads of talent in the squad. Like, we've some Rolls-Royce players, but they're not getting opportunity. And to find the balance then, I think, in the front five. I know we can't just flick a switch and get a Paul Williams, but we need some big, big heavy hitters and to find that balance. And I think if we can embrace continuity and get those one or two results, I think we give us the confidence to make further changes in personnel to go forward.
Okay, very good. Beautifully summed up, Liam Tolan. Great to have you with us. Keith Wood, as ever, thank you, and we'll talk to you next week. And I should mention as well, Brian O'Driscoll, tomorrow morning on OTBM if you're looking for more reaction.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein powered chicken bites.